Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Tree experts.
This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Big day. Big day on the show because we're all dining at Sue's house tonight. And we'll be able to tell stories tomorrow and show some pictures and stuff like that. How's the blueberry pie coming?
Oh, it's done.
Oh.
And it's sitting out there. I baked it this morning, so we'll just put some whipped cream on there. I even put sugar in the whipped cream like I was a person.
Oh, well, that's very nice.
Is it like, is it sitting out on, you know, like the kitchen windowsill, Sue? Is it?
Yeah, it's on the, it's right by it. Yeah. I don't have a windowsill really anymore in this house. You know, a couple houses ago, I had a windowsill and I had like a screen in it, and I had a pie out there cooling, and a bird attacked it.
No way.
Really?
To try to get to the pie.
Well, of course.
And so I don't miss the windowsill. I miss it for flowers, but man, that backfired on me one year, so I thought, forget it.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
No.
We'll keep that pie safe for us tonight. We're looking forward to it. The alumni of the show are also coming tonight.
Do you have people to park our cars, or do we park on our own?
I'm afraid you're going to have to park on your own.
Wait, what?
Yes.
There's no valet?
Oh, my gosh. We could pay my neighbor Carolyn to do it. She'd get a kick out of that.
All right. Ethan and I, we're going to pop around on some stuff here. Ethan and I were having a conversation yesterday. I'm just curious about your position on this, Fred and Sue. So he was eating a banana as a snack when I was kind of hovering yesterday. And to me, the banana looked a little unripe, like some brown spots. I'm not an unripe, you know, banana guy. I give the unripe bananas to, like the two, I don't know, not ripe enough is different. This would be too ripe. You know what I mean? The brown spots. I give those to Oreo, the bunny, because he likes that. But Ethan, your position on this is a little different, isn't it?
So, in my opinion, the perfect time to eat a banana is when it is just beginning to develop some spots to where it's semi spotty with the brown spots. Mm-hmm. If it is green at all, I don't think it's ready yet, personally. That is my opinion of the perfect time to eat it.
I agree with Mark Reardon. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
I think I might agree.
Okay,
with Ethan.
Think through this, Fred.
I can't eat a green, any green.
No green at all.
A banana, not at all.
Okay.
But if I start seeing the brown spots, then it's like, well, just save that banana for the banana bread.
There's a sweet spot there. That's the thing. It's kind of like an in-between deal. But Ethan seems to lean on the brown other than the green. I would lean the other way.
I cannot believe that this is not like popular opinion that green when you have to bite it and you can feel like it's still like hard almost.
I like a firm banana, Ethan. I know that sounds personal, but I do.
You know, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that, Mark Reardon.
There's nothing you can't say.
What I gotta say is it's really disappointing to me when I go into a Walmart and every banana on the stand is green.
And that happens a lot because I think they go through so many of them.
Well, but you could just take them home and they'll get ripe.
Well, that's what I do. Thank you, Susie. Thank you.
This is what led to the next part of our conversation because what Mark missed is that my banana wasn't like mostly yellow with a few spots. It was more so like yellow, with, like covered in large brown spots.
Oh,
there
no.
was
yeah.
a lot of brown. No. And while this is not how I prefer to eat them, my dilemma is that my wife sides with you guys. She likes the bananas to be more green. Once they have spots, she's done. So when we go to the store on every Sunday, we plan out how many bananas are we do we need to get. I am a one banana per day kind of guy. I have it with my lunch every single day.
Do you really?
She usually has 2 to 3 a week. So she'll say, okay, yeah, I'll grab 3 this week. The problem is that she almost never eats her weekly banana amount that she says she's going to eat. Yeah. And I am stuck having to eat more bananas to where I have to wait longer to eat some of these, and I end up having to eat these really
these
soft
are called
brown
irreconcilable
ones.
Differences. I don't know if you
no,
know
No, they
that.
Are not. This is the perfect thing. She can have some when they're green turning yellow, and then when she misses the mark, you could just eat clean up.
But the problem
with the brown
is that I have so many already that I have to eat on my own.
Yeah.
So I guess I need to start buying
just
less
need
on mine.
Get fewer. And eat hers that she's missing.
Okay, let her continue to get her 3 and say she's going to eat them when she's really going to eat 1 to 2.
Right.
But I start getting maybe 3 or 4.
Okay, Mark. But let me explain to you why this became an issue yesterday. Because as I was watching Ethan with the banana, he was challenged. There may be a term for this, but what he was doing is, and I think we can all relate with this if you've had bananas, is the peel, the outside, what would you call it, the outer part of the banana that you peel was peeled down. But then there's, you know, when you get that thing that's a little bit, you know, that little strand of, and you gotta peel those individual strands back. I don't like doing that. And on a real, toward the green banana, you don't have that issue.
That is true.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for your support. I mean, we didn't have this type of agreement on ketchup on hot dogs, but I'm glad that we've come around on this and we can agree.
Well, they're just cleaner to eat. They're not mushy and they're less sugary. But it really is difficult to get it at just the right time. The green is just about to disappear. Boom, you have to do it. Otherwise, it's too
I'll tell you what, Ethan, if you really want to solve this, get a bunny because Oreo solves all these problems for him because he doesn't care. He's not picky. He doesn't care if it's a green banana, if it's a mushy banana, if it's a brown banana. For him, it's crack. He loves bananas.
Hey, Sue, let me ask you. I know your position on hot dogs and ketchup. That's a no for you, right?
Of course.
Well, how are you on bratwurst? Because that's coming up tonight.
Wait. Hold on a second.
If you want to, yes.
Do you not have ketchup for us? What?
You do not eat.
Hey, we figured out what you guys
hang
can
on.
Bring tonight.
I may cancel tonight. You're telling me I'm coming to your house and I won't have ketchup to put on my
You do not eat ketchup on a bratwurst.
Yes, you do.
No, you do
Fred,
not.
Do
unless
you?
Unless you are five
Fred
years old.
Fred does. This is not, hold on. This is just disturbing. After this agreement, we seem to be on the same page no more than 90 seconds ago.
No.
This is not the same rules for hot dogs, Sue. That's
no. On
no.
the bratwurst.
The fans need to weigh in on this.
Guys,
come on, people.
Listen,
be with me on the ketchup on the brats.
Listen, it's okay. We have a urine-scented Schnucks just down the road that you can go to, and you can pick up your ketchup. It's a win-win.
And let me say this. If this is really nice,
Fred's got
good
us covered.
Brats.
Fred's saying he's got us covered. He's going to go home first.
Oh, is he going to go home and get it?
No, I'll hit the Schnucks on off for
I can do that, too.
You guys, but if you try it without it, this is a really expensive good brat. If you were to try
Sue,
it without it.
I'll try it without it, Sue.
Thank you. It's got cheese in it. There's all kinds of different good stuff in there. That
I want ketchup.
I want ketchup.
You sound like a stubborn 9-year old.
Oh my gosh.
No, Sue listing all these great reasons she goes to this special meat store.
But I've never
got cheese inside of the brat.
I've eaten
and
brats.
And you're like, no, I want ketchup.
I've eaten brats my whole life. I put ketchup on my brats my whole life. I like brats. That's what we're doing. All right. How about on to one more topic before Sue's news?
Okay. Can I read all the comments? Sue is correct.
Not if they support you. No, I can't. You're breaking up again. I think it's because you're at home. I hear you kind of cutting out that we can't hear you.
There's some people saying barbecue sauce.
On brats.
What about barbecue sauce?
Some people do that. I don't do that.
I've never heard of that before on a brat.
These people are crazy if you don't think that there's something wrong with you if you don't like ketchup on a brat. I'm just saying. Fred guided me into this story. This is crazy. Have you heard about the hike in Montana where the guy fell on his what do they call this? Like the steel-tipped trekking pole. Have you seen this or heard about it?
No.
All right. So he's on a hike with his friend. His name is David Cifaldi. And I guess this is nearing on the summit of the state's highest peak earlier this month. And he slipped and he fell, and he ended up sticking that trekking pole right into his back. Like, it was stuck in his back, and then they're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and they don't know what to do. Here's his story.
I just had a really unfortunate slip and fall, and I remember rolling over, and this kind of realization of, like, something's not right here. And so I, you know, quickly realized I had this trekking pole stuck in my side. I pretty quickly realized this was just in the soft tissue, and was able to kind of talk to my friends a little bit and get everybody on the same page that we were gonna make the decision to hike out. Search and rescue coming to help you is free. The flight's not. And so that was obviously a factor in me deciding to self-rescue. I feel pretty good. I had quite a bit of pain and swelling the first few days. The swelling's gone down a bunch.
So the hike took 6 hours. So do you hear what he said there? It costs money. Like, they'll come in and rescue you, but if they have to fly you out, you're going to pay for that flight, right? The helicopter, probably. So 6 hours they walked down in order to get to the hospital. Here's his buddy, Jesse Ross.
When I first saw that the pole was in him, I didn't think it was real initially. He never complained at all. Like, never was, you know, bummed out about being hurt or anything like that. He was just head down, navigating, wanting to get off the mountain.
So he's a nurse. Did I mention that? So he, you know, he had a little information here maybe, but that's crazy that he's got this thing stuck in his body and they got to go down 6 hours down. It's 10 miles, Sue, back down the mountain where they had a parked car. And then they drove to the hospital, St. Vincent Regional Hospital in Billings, where this guy worked. He actually worked there.
Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
But he's okay. This happened.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
I put my own little question out there on the Twitter about the ketchup. We'll let you know how that turns out. Or if it doesn't turn out my way, I will not let you know that. So just so you know.
I'm hearing from people all over the place on this thing.
This is a big debate.
It really is. This woman says... It ruins, especially a good one. You can't taste it when you put on any condiment. She goes condiment free.
Oh, come on. Does she put onions, though?
Yeah, she said okay, a little bit of onion.
I'll give her credit there.
Yeah, for sure. It is National Climb a Mountain Day. None of us is going to do that.
Well, like the guy we just talked about.
I was going to say, especially after hearing that. It's also National Cheesecake Day. I do like a cheesecake.
I really love a
cheesecake.
I do, too. There's a friend of ours who makes them, and they're so good, but I guess they're time-consuming, at least the ones he makes, because he does, like, the graham cracker crust and the whole thing. Oh, it's so good. It's also National Chili Dog Day. Do you put ketchup on a chili dog, or do you say, oh, it's chili, so that's good enough?
Now you're just being mean, I think, is what's happening here. No, I don't put it on the chili dog, okay?
Okay, just checking. And it's also National Father-in-Law Day. Did you have a good father-in-law, Fred?
I think my wife's dad was already deceased by the time we got married.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. Mark, was yours too?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
Well, I had two fathers-in-law, okay?
Yeah.
Father-in-laws.
Which, yeah.
The first one was awesome. My ex-wife, James Reardon is his name, and he's very old right now, but he's hanging in there. Becky's dad, who passed away, was a POS, to be honest
with you.
Oh,
dear.
Oh, my God. The worst, one of the worst human beings to ever walk the planet. And she would admit that, but unfortunately, that was the case.
Oh, so you've had both extremes.
I've had both. Yeah, well, yeah. I really didn't have a relationship with her dad because she didn't have a relationship. I don't even want to get into it, but terrible person. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
How about you, Sue?
Question. Thanks, Fred.
Mine is a stepfather-in-law, and he's great. Yeah. So that's good. On this day in history, 128 years ago. Okay, so it's 1898. The Scientific American became the first magazine to publish a car ad. It was Winston Motors, and it was urging readers to, quote, dispense with a horse.
That's pretty good.
Oh, I love it. And 70 years ago today, it was 1956, when In God We Trust became the official motto of the U.S., and it appeared on our money for the first time a year later, and it was on a dollar silver certificate. And I guess I just did not realize that didn't
either.
Happen till 1956. Did you know that, Fred?
No, I thought it would have been a lot sooner.
I would have, too. Mark, did you? I had no idea.
I didn't either. I thought it would have. You mean earlier in history?
I meant earlier.
Yeah,
earlier.
Me too.
Yeah.
I don't think I did realize that, unless I learned it in a past Sue's News. But it does sound it would be something that would have happened earlier.
It does, although I have to say, I would have remembered, but I wouldn't, even if it was in Sue's News. And then 44 years ago today, in 1982, Night Shift opened, starring Henry the Fonz Winkler, Michael Keaton, before Batman, as two guys who turned the city morgue into a brothel with the help of Shelley.
It is outstanding.
Shelley Long.
I watched it 3 years ago, probably. I watched it again. It holds up. It is one of those, you know, great comedies that not enough people probably have seen. And Henry Winkler is so, and so is Michael Keaton. It's a young Michael Keaton.
Yes.
Full and bursting full of energy and future stardom.
Oh, my gosh. Totally agree. And I watched it. I think you watched it again. And then I thought, well, I have to watch it. It's great.
Yeah, it really is. It holds up well.
It does. And just to watch all those people be that young is kind of fun. All right. I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but there are celebrities who knew each other before they were famous, and some are even related. And I'm just going to talk about a few of them. But the one I mentioned yesterday was that Cameron Diaz and Snoop Dogg went to high school together in Long Beach. Just the image of those two passing each other in the hall. I love it. Then from The Office, John Krasinski and BJ Novak were friends before that show. They played in the same Little League team as kids.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
Come on. And then they ended up going to high school together. Okay, here's another one I did not know. Maya Rudolph, who I love, and Gwyneth Paltrow became friends when they were 7 years old. Their dads were best friends in college.
Wow.
What?
I have a good one to add here, by the way.
Oh, what have you got?
So this is straight from Sheryl Crow's mouth. All right. It was an interview she did in the early 1990s on BXR Radio in Columbia. I used to work on that station doing movie reviews. It was part of my group. She said that when she was a student at Mizzou, she went on a sorority mystery date with Brad Pitt.
And this was my God.
Well before anyone knew who those people were. Now, when she told the story, and this would have been around 92 or 93, they had still not, you know, met again, if you will. But they were also both big stars by that point. So that's crazy, isn't it?
Oh, that is totally crazy. Oh, so they went, but it wasn't a love connection.
And by the way, I've only heard that story one time. I've never even known. I don't even Google it. I don't know. But I know that she told that story. So I'm basing it on what Cheryl told the audience on that interview.
Well, that can't be wrong.
Right.
Larry David and Bernie Sanders are distant cousins. I think this is physically obvious.
Yes, it is, really.
I don't know how distant. And, okay.
Well, he played him on SNL, right?
Oh, that's
Remember
true,
he did.
Yeah. Sabrina Carpenter's aunt is Nancy Cartwright, who's the voice of Bart Simpson.
That's a good one.
What? Oh, I love that one. All right, I'm just going to keep... I could go for
there's this
a
artist
long
that
time.
I played to you guys a couple years ago, Ilse, right? She,
yeah.
Her grandfather was Sherwood Schwartz, the creator of Gilligan's Island
what?
And the Brady
right.
Bunch. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. There was an Upper Deck card featuring Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and those are the priciest sports cards ever sold. I bring this up for Fred.
Okay.
They went for $12.93 million.
Yeah, don't have it.
Oh, okay. Other expensive cards, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, LeBron James, and Patrick Mahomes. Kind of interesting.
You guys got to get me next week, ask me what's happening at my house with Pokemon cards.
Oh, no.
You would not even believe it. Like, my wife has been selling these because she figured out that some of these cards have value, and what people pay for Pokemon cards is ridiculous.
Oh, they're all
it's like
into
a,
it.
Becky's got like a side gig Pokemon thing
going. So
whose
were they?
She's buying them, but it's like baseball cards. You buy one, and if you get a good card, people want to pay above asking price because you have that card. I have no comprehension of it whatsoever. I think it's crazy. She's like meeting people in parking lots and selling Pokemon cards.
Oh, my God.
I'm not making it up.
She must be doing well.
She is.
That's great.
Good for her. I mean, that takes some stamina to get out there and pretend you care and look for stuff. I don't know if I have it in me. Let's see. Oh, there was this story about, okay, there's a new survey out where 49% of people would rather inherit nothing at all than have to deal with a relative's junk. 51% would prefer a few select items, receiving everyone, you know, just everything a loved one owned. And then they could pick through it. But 49% say, nope, I'd rather take nothing. They say 20% say they'd choose to inherit everything if that was an option. But a lot of this comes from experience because most Americans have already had to clear out a relative's home. And they say it's harder to grieve when you have to spend weeks sorting through everything they had. There are companies that I use, you know, when I sell somebody's house. I just sold one where they lived there for 53 years, and it's just too much
stuff.
That's
a long time.
And there are companies that will come in and do an estate sale, and then they'll take everything that doesn't sell in a dumpster. So they just essentially clear out the whole house. It's kind of a good idea. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. Okay. Blue whale calves can gain 200 pounds a day, every day, for most of the first year of their lives. This is why they're nursing roughly their first 8 months. 200 pounds
okay.
a day!
That is impressive. We talked about Dr. Fauci's hearing quite a bit on the show yesterday. I want to get right back into that. This is a New Hampshire senator that I've never heard of defending Dr. Fauci.
It must be enormously frustrating to know that this hearing is designed to entrap you. It must be very frustrating for your attorneys to hear the chair's mischaracterization of the legal issues and posture that impact your decisions at the witness table today.
Well, the Republicans obviously with a different take on all that.
Americans haven't forgotten the tragic stories of people who lost loved ones during COVID, and those were denied a chance to say goodbye.
Countless families, including my own, watched a loved one die behind glass or through a screen.
You force people to watch their loved ones die alone over the phone. It's disgusting.
Do you have the dignity to just say you're sorry?
David Zweig is with us this afternoon. He's an investigative journalist. He wrote a great book called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, The Virus, and A Story of Bad Decisions. He's with us this afternoon. Hello, David. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me again.
You were one of the first people I thought about, and I just have to tell you, I don't know if I've done any help at all, but I push your book all the time, and I did this week because it's such an important piece of work, and you know I've recommended this to even some other, you know, hosts that they have you on because it's just important. Now, I don't see, this is one of those things that's really confusing to me, David, because this to me should not be a partisan issue. What happened to this country, what happened to kids, what happened to a lot of people with the masking, the, you know, the vaccine, the promises of the vaccine, the show, all this stuff. You wrote about all this in the book. So your reaction to what happened yesterday?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this was expected that he was going to take the fifth, you know, and probably wise for him from a legal standpoint. But it's unfortunate for the public to not hear him give his responses to the questions from the senators. So it's one of those things where, you know, I get it for why he did it, but it's not really helpful to the American people.
One of the things that I know that you first, you know, started going down the road of is, and we talked about this quite a bit yesterday in the aftermath of the hearing, was COVID in kids and how it affected kids and, you know, how kids, and my daughter was one of them in kindergarten, had to wear masks. I've stated this several times in Missouri, David, very lucky compared to other states, but still, my daughter was wearing masks into the first grade, right? And when you started down this COVID rabbit hole, you were really finding that the evidence was pretty strong that children were basically not even affected by this virus.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule, automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. And from the very beginning, in March, I went along with everything and I had no particular reason to be skeptical, you know, necessarily about what was going on. But what I found very quickly was that the public health officials, along with most of the legacy media, was not really giving much information. They were sort of the media was acting more like an amplifier rather than a filter for information. And that's not what they're supposed to be doing. And I'm just north of New York City. And in the middle of April, cases began to drop off of a cliff. And that was after the expiration of, you know, the 15 days to slow the spread. And instead of them, you know, stopping after 15 days, as you surely remember, they added another 30 days. And that's when, for me, everything went awry. Was, well, wait a minute. We were told it's 15 days. We did it. We slowed the spread, at least certainly in a hot spot like New York City. Cases are, you know, you can look at a graph. Anyone can pull it up. Cases just start going down on like a, you know, 45-degree angle. Why aren't they reopening the schools? And that's what set me on my path, because as far as I could see, no one was talking about this. And it just made no sense to me. And I'll tag one thing onto that, which is you're asking me, you know, with kids and the harm to them. There was a very important meeting that occurred in Europe in May, and almost no one knows about it. But what they discussed in this meeting could have and should have changed the course of the pandemic in the United States. And it is 22 countries in Europe began reopening their schools at the end of April and the beginning of May. The education ministers from all of those nearly two dozen countries met, you know, virtually in the EU, and they said, we have observed no negative consequences of reopening schools. They met a second time in June and had the same determination. This was basically blacked out from the United States media. And that is what should have changed the course of action here. We had evidence. Millions of children were already in school in Europe. And here in the United States, the New York Times and Anthony Fauci and everyone else was pretending as if there was no evidence of this, that we didn't know what would happen when schools would reopen.
It's outrageous. And I, you know, was very aggressive in calling for the schools to be open in the aftermath of that as the summer went through. And this is when teachers were saying, holding signs up there, and Randy Weingarten was saying, you're going to kill our teachers, when the evidence was exactly the contrary. And I was encouraging publicly and privately my superintendent in the Rockwood schools at the time, who was a pretty good guy. I'm like, look, here's the Mark Reardon plan. You get these young kids in particular back in school right now. I was even given a little leeway on the high school stuff, you know, maybe just to wait and see. But even under those circumstances, and maybe those kids were damaged the most, they missed proms, they missed homecomings, it took us too long. Now, in Missouri, it didn't take as long. We were lucky. Where you were, though, it took like 2 years, right?
It was really bad. Yeah, in New York, things, you know, and it varied from district to district. But kids did not get back to full-time school for a very, very long time. And when you look at places like California and pockets of Virginia and Maryland, there were kids who did not step foot into a school building for well over a year, some of them even close to 2 years. That is such a radical moment in American history that, to my mind, even though I wrote like a 500-page book on this, I don't think this has been reckoned with or discussed nearly enough in the public for something so extraordinary, where you had healthy children prevented from what we've always been told my whole life. I assume you knew this too, Mark, which is we were told this is a right. Education is a right, you know, for every American child. Well, that right was taken away from millions of healthy kids. And there was, and let's be clear, there was no benefit. I've done all the research. I have hundreds and hundreds of endnotes in my book with links to studies and all of the data. There is no evidence that school closures over a long term saved any lives or had any benefit.
You know, one of the things that you pointed out, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but you mentioned Mike DeWine, who was the governor of Ohio. He actually mentioned St. Louis in the early part of this pandemic because of what happened with the flu in 1918, right? Because we did things differently here in St. Louis that were more extreme than other cities, I think.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, the St. Louis versus Philadelphia example. This was a big thing that DeWine and many others were pointing out. And what happened was they showed that if they would show this graph saying if everyone locks down completely, that that will help blunt the, you know, the amount of cases. And they showed that in 1918, there's this graph where if you compare St. Louis versus Philadelphia, that if you lock down early, one city saved a lot of people and the other one had many more deaths. What they don't show and what they don't talk about, and I talk about this in the book, is that there is a guy, Robert Barrow, who did a study on this. He's an economist. I forget the name of the organization he's with, but he did an extensive study on this. And once you look at all of the different cities in America over time, there was no correlation at all between the duration of the school closures and ultimately the number of deaths in a particular city. Like everyone sort of forgot the last chapter of the story. So things can be very compelling and you have this visualization that gets everyone, you know, all wound up and thinking that they're being virtuous and this is what we need to do. But cooler heads did not prevail. There was a plan. We've had all sorts of guidebooks within the CDC and other agencies on how to handle a pandemic. And very quickly, Anthony Fauci and others immediately went off script and just started, you know, they just were calling audibles every day on this thing.
Well, we've learned that, yes.
When people say we didn't know, they did the best they could with the information at the time, that is not true. And one of the most important things I tried to do with my book and just in, you know, in my general reporting on this topic is to really put that myth to rest. And I think it's important for all of us to understand that history. So hopefully we can avoid something like this happening again, whether it's a pandemic or some other inevitable crisis.
And that's why I think it's important as well. And your book is called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and a Story of Bad Decisions. Why is it? This is still kind of, I think I mentioned this at the beginning, but why is there such resistance on the part of so many people on the left? Look, they're still out there praising Dr. Fauci as an American hero. He saved lives. And I've admitted, David, look, the early part of that pandemic was confusing. March, April, we didn't know exactly what we were looking at. But like you just indicated, we knew some things pretty quickly that were not shared. But why is there such resistance and why is this a partisan issue? That just baffles me.
Yeah, well, you know, you hit on it there. Unfortunately, things became coded politically, either, you know, red or blue. And once something was coded in that manner, it didn't matter what evidence, what information. And I think that political branding on certain people or certain topics, it appears to be permanent. And there is some section of the population. There literally is nothing that could be said about Anthony Fauci or some other topics related to the pandemic that would ever change their mind. It just doesn't matter. So it's very unfortunate, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I think the only thing we can do is at least try to get the information out there about what really happened. And I think there clearly is some portion of the population who are not locked in to their, you know, political tribe. And those are the people who you try to reach. And I think there's some evidence. I've been seeing people writing about it and other people contacting me who are pretty far left, who even this latest thing with Fauci pleading the fifth, seeing the stuff from the diary, seeing his duplicity, seeing how he lied to the public in a whole variety of ways, I think that it is breaking that dam a little bit, at least for some soft middle of the population, and that's really valuable.
So that's great to hear. You know, I will tell you, maybe I've told you this before, just because I think it would be an awesome experience for students, but I recommended to the dean of the journalism school at my alma mater, the University of Missouri, his name is David Kirpius, to have you come to campus and to explain what the media did during all of this, because it's really shameful. And I think people now, he would not take me up on that offer. I thought, you know, I bet David would come to Columbia and maybe do a speech. I just think some of the lessons in your book, and you know I'm a huge fan. So thank you so much for coming on here. Keep the fight up, and we really appreciate it.
Well, it's so kind of you to say, Mark, and it's great talking with you.
Thank you very much. That's David. Well, as usual, we're hitting the hard topics here this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. We started the hour with an intense debate on whether or not, I didn't even anticipate this, Sue. I mean, this came out of nowhere, right? But since we're having brats tonight at Sue's house, and everyone's invited, I think, the whole audience, maybe not.
No.
I didn't know that the topic of putting ketchup on a bratwurst was controversial, but I am getting killed on the social media on this.
Yeah.
Like, nobody is, there's like a couple people on my side. I cannot believe it. Again, going back to my, you know, evidence at Busch Stadium, why would you put out ketchup?
Well,
if people wouldn't want to have ketchup.
Hot dogs.
It's only for kids. That's what you're saying. Why is ketchup only for kids, Sue?
Well, it masks the flavor of a really good brat and the delicate spices and that sort of thing.
But maybe it makes it taste better?
Well, that, of course, is your opinion. Mm-hmm. But maybe if you were to try some, try like a fancy one without it, and we'll see what you think.
Fred is going to cover me on the ketchup.
Yeah, Fred will bring it, because Fred's mad because the last time he was here, we didn't have any ketchup either.
Oh, I didn't realize there was a little history there.
Yeah, so he's bringing his own, so he'll have you covered. But I'm going to have you try it both ways, and we'll see what you think.
Well, then you're going to try to make me eat two brats, right?
Well, we can cut them in half.
Half and half? All right, we'll see what happens. We're looking forward to that. We got Charles Lipson coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to talk politics with Charles. Steve Butts will be here. We love Steve. He's a friend, and we want him to win the state Senate seat. Now, he is in a tough race with another Democrat right now. And, you know, one of the things I've been talking about, and this is, I don't know how many people really do this. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to tell you. I am not in Steve's district, but you can, if you want, Sue, you would be a good example of this. If you wanted to vote for Steve in that race, you have to ask for a Democrat ballot, right?
I think you would, yes.
Yeah, no, you would. And I'm just saying, there's nothing, if you're someone who typically votes Republican, there's nothing wrong with doing that, because Dennis Hancock is going to be the Republican nominee for St. Louis County, you know, executive. So the choice you have then, a couple of them, if you pull the Democrat ballot, which is why I'm going to do it. You can vote for Melissa Price Smith, who's running as prosecutor. I think she's proven that she's doing a good job in that office. You can vote for the St. Louis County executive race, Jake Zimmerman, or Brian Williams, the you know, the state senator. I'm going to vote for Brian. Nothing against Jake. I like Jake. I think he's a nice guy. Having known both of them a little bit, and maybe I don't know enough, I think Brian's a little bit more serious about solving some of the problems that we have here in St. Louis. I wish I could say that Dennis Hancock has a chance in the general. I just don't think he does, and I'm basing that on past experience here over the last 15 years with Republicans like Rick Stream and Bill Corrigan coming really close, Sue, really close.
Yeah.
But it's a Democrat county, and you're just not going to, especially with this particular cycle, I don't think Republicans will do particularly well. But, you know, that's not, there's nothing wrong with just pulling that ballot. Or if you just want to vote on the amendments, you can just, you know, vote on those as well. The other thing about, I can't remember, did you vote already, Sue?
No.
Okay, there's a couple of these St. Louis County propositions, like Prop U and something else, that honest to God, people have asked me to explain.
I've got to read those.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.